Thank you, David. Good morning to everyone. I see we have a pretty good size room here for this. Feel free to come up closer, but I will try to speak where you can hear me, but hopefully you can see the slides from where you are at. This morning I'm going to was asked to present to you some of what we know about utilizing sensors and such to either help us with variable rate nitrogen or evaluate spatial variability and things of that nature. So as the title of my talk shows there, I'm going to use this term crop reflectance quite a bit as this indicator for nitrogen availability and fertilizer needs to maximize profitability. And I'm also going to use that terminology throughout my talk because I still believe that's where we need to be headed when we think about our proper nitrogen rates. Everyone knows recent increases in costs and what's going on in the industry, and understanding that now more than 50% of our nitrogen fertilizer comes from offshore. We import quite a bit of our nitrogen now, so we used to make it pretty much all ourselves, and that has changed on a world scale and takes the cost of producing the fertilizer, of course, about 80% of that is tied to the energy costs. So, of course, deficiencies limit yields as well as can lower the quality. And I don't know that we quite see that as much as possibly or maybe the risk is more on the excess side. And putting too much nitrogen on cotton, of course, we can influence things such as rank growth, boll rot, things of this nature, difficulty in harvesting. I think that was really seen this year in places when we got all that rainfall. Increased need for growth regulators, insecticides, etc. So one thing I want to point out, and basically because I am a soil fertility person and have worked with nitrogen for most of my career, but I honestly believe in that nitrogen availability is a determinant of many things. The amount of biomass that we see, just this is in a producer's field in the Delta, and you could see a zero nitrogen rate and next to it an excessive rate. And you just see the differences in biomass, ground cover, leaf area, greenness, the physiological processes of photosynthesis and translocation of photosynthates and source sink relationships, all those maturity, etc. And of course yield. So when we look at this crop reflectance, I want to set up a little bit about the concepts here and the theoretical basis of it. When we look at crop growth, I honestly believe that there's limiting factors. There's multiple limiting factors affecting it. And so when we look at crop growth, it's really an integration of all the factors influencing. And where I tend to focus on is the size of the available soil M pool and, of course, available water, as well as climatic conditions. So remote sensing or crop reflectance is an indication of this growth. So with selected crop reflectance indices, I believe we can use these as possibly a surrogate measurements to detect leaf end, nitrogen content, etc. We definitely can utilize these to map and visualize spatial variances across our fields using crop reflectance. So it is giving us a growth potential, and we're at least as a partial indication of the relative differences in this utilization and or of the size of the available soil M pool. What we know, of course, and some of you who follow this know a lot of this, but I'll try to go through it quickly here. Using crop reflectance or sensor-based fertilizer end management, some of what we know, we can use green band indices, we can use red band, we can use red edge, etc. The green band, I'm going to use this one today. We have found it to be pretty effective, and we've also found it effective for leaf end and potassium, and working in that green as well as the red edge areas. These vegetative indices we have seen from aerial imagery in our earlier studies. One problem with that is it almost took up to peak bloom to really visualize that real well and get data to fit real well. So there are some problems with this methodology, but I'll talk about that some more as we go on here. Of course, there's all different kinds of vegetative indices, and there's some that are more structural, there's some that are going after more chlorophyll, and what I tend to work with is really trying to get more at the chlorophyll, the nitrogen biomass, etc. Give you a little background on the studies done at Mississippi State, which is our plant science research unit, of course, randomized, complete block, all that. My plots, due to the sensor that I'm using, plots are 12 rows wide, 38-inch row spacing, and 125 feet long. So these are big plots, not your typical small plots. And within that, we have four sublocations for sampling and such. So this is kind of a aerial view that you can go get this off of Web Soil Survey right now and find my plots. And here's the actual plot layout. I thank my graduate student for putting this together, Tyson. I stole it from your talk last night and put it in mine. See, graduate students are good for something. but interesting, look at a black and white photo. Here's my zero nitrogen. You can find that zero nitrogen. Here's a zero nitrogen. Look at that sticking out like a sore thumb there. This is just black and white photo. So the point I'm trying to make is there's strong visualization here, you know. And so it falls out pretty good. But here's my end rate, 0, 40, 80, and 120. That's all I had room for. That's all the land they would give me. I would have had 5 end rates in there. I do split my application 50% at planting, 50% at early square. I use UN 32% N, banded about 8 inches to the side of the row, try to go about 3 inches deep or so. This has been no-till except the first year I did straighten the rows out and had hipped them up and knocked it down. So I'll show you first year data was a little bit of conventional till. The variety's been constant throughout 445. Don't use growth regulators. It is a nitrogen study. So I really want to see what nitrogen does as a growth regulator. And we scout for weeds and insects, et cetera, and do appropriate controls. One thing different that you'll see here, and you don't see a lot of other people using because there's limited quantity of these actually in the United States, and this is they used to be called Hydroagro North America. The parent company is Yara now out of Norway, pretty much the world's largest nitrogen manufacturers, but they've also had this, what they call the Yara N sensor, and it's used quite a bit over in Europe, and I got one, I guess it's almost 10 years ago. But at this point, it is a true spectrometer in this unit, collecting 20 wavelengths from 450 to 900, and the spectral resolution is about plus or minus 5 nanometers, and there's 4 of these eyes, so there's 4 fiber optics feeding into that spectrometer, and there's 1 upward irradiance correction on this blue surfboard here, or spoiler. We've been accused of tractor NASCAR when we drive down Highway 82 with that thing. And we do the GPS correction, all that. So you can see either from an aerial view of how those two eyes on one side are looking, or really on the other side too, and it all integrates it all together. From the back of a tractor, you can see what the angles, it's off nadir, and all that. So I'm sensing like rows 2, 3, and 4, and then 9, 10, and 11. So you see, I don't use rows 5, 6, 7, and 8 because we run over them throughout the season. I don't have enough money to buy one of those high clearance machines. The wavelengths we've been collecting on a routine basis is 550 in the green, red at 650, the red edge 700 and 710, and then 840. Basically, I'm using this green normalized vegetative indice here. That's the near infrared minus the green divided by the sum of those two. First of all, let's look at the crop response to fertilizer N. And you can see I've got 6 years of data from 2004 to this year. Okay. Here's that first year, that 2004, and we kind of showed a response up to 120. But after that, we've been pretty much at the 80-pound rate. And, of course, this year sticks out like a sore thumb. We left about 200 to 400 pounds right under the row when that cotton picker went through. All that hard lock just made a nice little white carpet under our cot. But you can see once again what the response was in maximizing agronomically around 80. So if we put that all together and we look at the average here, of course the economic optimum is going to be to the left of this 80. So it's probably somewhere, you know, 68 to 72 pounds of nitrogen or so. Haven't yet had an opportunity to work with our ag economist to calculate that, but it's definitely less than the 80. But for purposes of this talk, let's just kind of focus on this 80. Now you can definitely see what happens when we get that excess on. And so that's six year average there. So we've established that 80 is our optimum. So let's look at, we do take total nitrogen uptake, and here's for 2008, give you an idea to make that 1,050 pounds, or let's just call it 1,000 pounds of lint, that two bale cotton. You see what it's taken. It's taken the variability is from somewhere around 100 to 120 pounds, but let's just call it about, on the average, about 110 pounds of uptake in the plant to get that 1,000 pounds. So we're talking about 55 pounds of nitrogen above ground per 500 pounds of lint. All right, that's our total and uptake above ground. If we monitor, one thing you've got to understand about if you use leaf sampling and things of that nature, you can see across the board our end rates on the dates here. And I'm trying to get the, there it is. If you look at the zero, you see how it comes in, or this is early square, the second week of squaring, third week, fourth week, maybe first flower right here. What I call early flower, we're usually into our second week of flowering because I want to make sure everything out there is flowering. And so you see what happens to the zeros. We hover around a little above 3.5%, and then we drop off once we're getting closer to flowering. You see the 40 actually doesn't do too bad, but you could see by the time we get to that third week of squaring, it's starting to drop off. And see how the 80 kind of rides in there and holds above that about 4.25% leaf end, and then begins to drop off linearly. So we got a moving target here. You've got to understand that. And then, of course, our 120 maintains that little bit higher level. So one reason we do a lot of leaf tissue is because we try to monitor the crop and understand where it's going, where it's at. Now, if we start to try to relate these leaf ends concentrations to this green NDVI, of course, here's early in the season. You got to understand the highest leaf end range is down here early in the season, like I showed you here. The levels are highest early in the season. But the green NDVIs, there's not much leaf area out there. And there's not much slope or differential in the green NDVI. So you can understand it's a little bit hard to detect differences early on. And these are just my end rates, 0, 40, 80, and 120 along these lines. But you see what happens as the season goes on, how the leaf end values decrease, but the NDVIs are increasing. Because, of course, we're making biomass out there and we're accumulating nitrogen in the plant. All right. When we compare to plant height, we can do a pretty good job of predicting plant height. These techniques work real well for plant height. Regardless of the date, they do a pretty good. We get pretty good scatter on plant height. But notice the differential in GNDVI at early square from 0.44, say, to about 0.52. Over here, we're from 0.7 to 0.8 at early flower, and about the same at peak flower. Even though we've grown a little bit in height, our reflectance values haven't changed that much. All right. Well, we need a target. And I like to say, well, let's try to at least identify a target. If you're going to go out hunting or target practice or something, you know, you want to have something to shoot at. So We know that 80's been our optimum. We don't want to be too much to the left. We don't want to be to the right. As a producer, you're going to be applying nitrogen when? From probably about early square, this line right here, to this date here, to hopefully you're finishing up by early bloom. So you've got this period in here where you go from needing about 4.5% leaf in to where the optimum might be about 3.75% at early bloom. So it's from here to here, you've got another moving target, but you kind of need to be somewhere in that target there. All right. If we just take the 80 and plot it with GNDVI, you can see that the GNDVI is a moving target within that 80. But we've established that our 80 is our target and where we want to be. And so what you could do is, depending on the where you're at in the season, you see physiologically, if you're going to use an NDVI or green NDVI or something, you've got to know where you're at and the range in the NDVIs for that growth stage or days after planting or what have you. But what I propose and the methodology I've been trying to use is say we pick a, we're coming out here the third week of squaring, which is what this is, and we're going to pick a, say that our target is going to be 0.68. All right, so if we can model and make a response curve like this, which is from my actual data, and we pick out 0.68, that green NDVI, and we know that that is where that 80 optimum gives us that number around that physiological stage of growth. Of course, we know that if we're driving through that field, anything above that green NDVI, we're going to turn the nitrogen off, or you're going to have a base rate of 20, or, you know, that's going to be a producer decides that. Mine would be, you know, probably zero. But when we get below that, we know we've got a deficiency. So we want to try to make up that deficiency, so we need some calibration there. We need a line like this that would say, okay, you hit a spot in the field, that's 0.65 green NDVI. That's equivalent to about 30 pounds of nitrogen. So what's the difference? The optimum of 80 and 35, you're looking at needing what? About 45, the variable rate nitrogen applicator would put 45 on that spot. All right. So that's one technique that I'm proposing. Now, there's a lot of things you can do with this kind of data. The visualization potentials are tremendous. Here's just a couple maps I made. I'm sorry they don't look real good there. They look better right here, but I can't show you this one. But basically, this is taking my plots and taking my leaf end values and calibrating the data to leaf end. These are actual leaf end values. So if you knew from your extension service or what have you, they tell you at early square you should be 4% in, you could do some leaf sampling, you calibrate your equipment, and you could do an application based on that. So there's different ways of going about it. Predicting plant height, easy. I don't do much of this, but I'm just we turned it into a predicted plant height map, and I could show you the heights of my different plots. And then of course you can do something like this predicted N biomass, knowing that the N uptake for the optimum was around 110, 120 pounds, I can match that to my 80 plots and calibrate based on that if I wanted to. So in summary, on-the-go sensors, I believe, can assist in the mapping, of course, in spatial variability as well as temporal variations, you know, through time, in the growth and nitrogen nutrition. Believe that real-time crop reflectance can assist in the application of fertilizer N. To account for spatial differences in N availability, but I emphasize this strongly that you've got to have a systematic calibration to maximize the accuracy of that application. And I firmly believe that we need to, that this profit maximizing fertilizer N rate should continue to at least be pursued as the desired target. And with that,
I've
got a couple minutes for questions or comments. I welcome either. Good, bad, indifferent. Wayne?
Yeah. How much you're shooting at of an angle. Is that angle of
reflectance coming off into your sensors, how much difference would it be going off at an angle, say, if you were shooting straight down?
Straight down would be nadir, which is, you know, when you do an aerial, they try to do nadir, and satellite is nadir. So they try to look perpendicular to the crop. The off nadir, what the off nadir does, the theory there is that you're seeing more of the crop and less of the soil. Because if you know when you calculate these indices, soil interferes, you know, with the measurement. So that's the theory there, why they decided, this company, to do theirs in that type of fashion.
Does it change as the plants get bigger? Does it make a difference?
Sure, but the way we have the height calculated and such, I know I'm in rows 2, 3, 4, and then...
Are you moving your sensor up in the plant?
I don't go ahead and adjust for that. We're in small plots, and... I needed 12 rows just to even use that sensor on a plot scale. So, yeah, Kevin?
Yeah, Jack, there's a comment in the beginning. You were talking about the distinction between economic and agronomic. I think in cotton, since their nitrogen and their price of land are often similar, the ratio is 1, and where I put on data, I think it's within a pound.
The economic, okay. What Kevin was commenting about, and it does depend on that, the input-output cost ratio there, and being that it is, you know, we're probably going to be at maybe 65 cents or so, I think, this year per pound of N, and then per pound of lin, depending on what it is, could be close to 1. But that's why I say, for the sake of this talk, let's just say 80 was the optimum. It's been... That's less than probably what a lot of our producers use, that 80. So, any other comments? Yes, sir.
Just under ideal conditions, which we now all know we never have.
We have average conditions, but we don't have ideal.
But under ideal conditions, if a producer was able to, through variable rate nitrogen application, produce a consistent leaf nitrogen concentration, what would your target concentration be?
Depends on the date, the physiological stage, but the first, you know, early square, second week square, somewhere around 4.1-4.2%. And we've published some of that data in a regional study, and, you know, across states and regions, it was somewhere around 4.25%. And you see it was kind of flat line, and, you know, when you get closer to flowering, though, that's when the nitrogen starts to disappear to the developing seed and bowls and such. So it's a little bit harder at that time. But hopefully you've got your nitrogen on over here.
So at the fifth week of bloom, what would you ideally be shooting
for? In the fifth week of bloom? Gosh, that's past peak flower. So, it's just way too late. You know, we're not going to be doing a fertilizer application then.
Right, that's not the question. The question is at that fifth week of bloom, where should you be as far as leaf in?
You know, we quite haven't gone to leaf sampling in the fifth week. I don't know if anybody else can comment out. We get peak bloom, which is somewhere around 3 weeks after first bloom, and that's where, I don't even know if I put the peak bloom on here. This is actually early flower here, so peak bloom is even, we'd be somewhere around 3% or so, something like that, is what I'd predict. Anything else?
Well, Jack, I had a question for you about the flat growth regulators. You didn't use them in your experiments, but would you care to comment about the potential savings you'd have from variable rate nitrogen applications in growth regulators and such?
I don't work in the area of growth regulators and actually have never used them in 23 years of growing cotton. So I'm not the one to comment on them, good, bad, or indifferent. I have read a recent study. There's been a big review by Darren Dodds and the cotton specialists, and I've read their paper, and I don't care to comment on that. I feel good though about that. Nitrogen is a pretty good growth regulator in itself, but You saw the list there. I honestly believe you get excess growth out there. You know, you'd start extending your internodes too much. You're attracting insects. You can't defoliate your crop. I mean, just problem after problem. And that problem was magnified so much this year of those of you who got rain late in the season. I had 12 to 18 inches of a crop, that 120 rate, not a single bowl on it. And the plants were as green as can be, but, you know, they were hard to defoliate, and a lot of bowl rot, things of that nature. So I think you create more problems, and the cost savings, I believe, are there. I mean, depends how you want to manage a crop. I like to begin with the simple stuff, and fertility is pretty complicated, but, you know, it's enough for me to handle. You start throwing in all these other problems, let's just try to keep it simple. Yes, sir. Just comment on it in general? Well, if you were doing leaf sampling and you were monitoring that crop and, you know, you felt like that boll load was there and you saw that tinge of yellow, you know, I wouldn't do it just because you woke up one day and say, you know, I better get some nitrogen out. I've had farmers call me on corn and say, you know, I've got 200 pounds of N down on my corn, and do I need to put more out, fly it on? I say, well, what does your corn look like? And they say, well, it's black. I go fishing. You know, but it's really, you know, if you're seeing it and you got that good bolo, you know, you got all the circumstances where, hey, 10 pounds of urea, you know, if you're doing insecticide application or something like that, it'll give you that 5 pounds of nitrogen, and urea works good foliar. That's been proven. You're not going to get all your nitrogen out with the foliar. It's just a finishing.
Well, Jack will be around for a discussion at the end, so let's give Jack a hand.